This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Andrea Seabrook in Washington, filling in for Neil Conan. Thousands of freshmen across the country were shepherded off to college by doting parents earlier this month. As the semester rolls on, some of those parents will call, text, or email their kids every day, more than once a day, maybe. Some will intervene in a roommate dispute or call a professor to question the grading system. These well-intentioned helicopter parents hover over their adolescents' affairs, not knowing when or how to take a hands-off approach. Today, Amy Dickinson of Ask Amy joins us to sort out these parents. Later in the hour, an environmentally friendly eyesore when going green gets gross. But first, how much parental involvement is too much? Are you a helicopter parent or a teacher dealing with them? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Amy Dickinson is here with us. She joins us every other week. Amy writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us from member station. I think, Amy, you're on the phone, aren't you?
Actually, I'm in Syracuse today at WAER.
Fabulous. Good to have you, yeah. Amy. I understand that you just dropped your daughter off in college. How are you feeling?
I did. And Andrea, can you hear the... That's my helicopter going off into the distance. I did. I took I wish I was better at the, you know, the sound effects. I'm sorry. I dropped her off at William and Mary in Virginia, and it went very, very smoothly, very easily. Although I have to say she has two roommates, and one of her roommates had a couple of parents who I thought were going to need armed escorts to leave. You know,
well, what were they doing?
Well, it was like, you know, they just couldn't go. They kept finding things to do, finding things to help her with. And the college is aware that this leave-taking can be hard. And so they very craftily start out with events with the parents and the kids together. And then, oh, what do you know? The kids have to go over there to do that. And it's bye-bye, you know. So they were very aware of it, and they tried to make it, you know, common sense.
So it's not just freshman orientation. It's freshman's parents orientation.
I have to say, those of us in a certain generation, it was like, it feels, compared to this, it feels like when I went off to college, it was like, okay, here's your bus ticket. Bye-bye, honey. See you in 4 years. But I think the colleges now are very aware that parents have a different kind of attitude about dropping their kids off. There were some talk, the dean of students talked to us about feelings we would be having, our feelings, because, you know, with my generation, it's really all about us and our feelings.
I see. Are you a baby boomer?
I am. And, you know, I think that's what this helicopter stuff really is about. A lot of it is about the needs of the parent.
What makes this high school to college transition such a unique time for teens, Amy?
For teens, you know, these days, a lot of them, it's the first time they've, you know, physically moved away from their parents' steely gaze. And it seems that, you know, our parenting, I think it's a phase, but our parenting right now seems to be very a little bit overwhelming. And so this transition for kind of a typical freshman kid could be the first time that they have ever really faced making choices pretty much on their own.
You know, I've been reading stories about parents who are logging onto Facebook and MySpace to check out their friends. And I mean, to some extent, there's a little bit of protection here of kids. I don't want to make them sound like these parents are crazy. But on the other hand, when they're logging on to see the Facebook page of their kids' college roommates, it starts to be a different story, right?
It's funny you should mention that, Andrea, because
did you do
one
that?
Of the things one of the things that I did do was I And I was like, oh, I love Facebook. I'm in love with Facebook because my daughter and I did this together. We were like, ooh, let's check them out. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. It's a great way to kind of get to know somebody before you actually meet them. Mm-hmm. So we did. I was permitted. Now I asked her. I mean, I wasn't going to just secretly log on trying to get onto Facebook and check these people out. But my daughter had already been emailing with these girls, and she was like, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, here's her picture. And so we did look on their Facebook page. Is that bad?
Well, I guess my question is, does technology this is the first generation of parents with kids going up to college where the kids and the parents are fully versed in texting, emailing. You could be chatting with your parents while you're writing your term paper or your, for that matter, your work from your Ask Amy column. You could be chatting with your daughter. Does that mean that the game is a little bit different here?
Well, technology has changed everything. You know, when I was in college, you waited in line behind the payphone in your dorm. So, and one of the things that technology has changed is the expectation that people will be in touch very frequently. One of the things I've dealt with in my own situation with my daughter is actually our tendency, even though I think that we're very close, our tendency is to not be in touch frequently during the day. I mean, I would never expect to talk to her more than once a day, for instance. And since she's been gone about 3 weeks, we've talked a couple of times a week and, you know, it's been pretty low key. But I think there are parents who they say, you have a cell phone. Why don't you pick up, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of contact.
And, you know, Amy, I'm not the mother of a college student, but I am the mother of a one-year-old. And it seems like these ideas are trickling down the age groups. I mean, I've seen parents who won't let their kid, you know, crawl across the floor without, you know, a hardcore supervision there. And I've been reading articles that say, well, if your toddler is starting to climb, you have to let them climb. You can't keep them from climbing because it's not safe. And so how early does this parental behavior begin?
Well, I think you've totally put your finger on it because it actually does begin when they're babies, because when your baby is starting to crawl or starting to pull herself up mm-hmm. on the coffee table, will you let her, try to balance, fall down on her bottom? Would you let her do that? And I think that a healthy balance is to watch some of that happen without swooping in. But I do think that it starts very, very young. It's certainly, I remember seeing this at my daughter's nursery school when, you know, they're 2.5, they're toddlers. It's very challenging for them to leave you. And there were some parents who I could tell made it much more difficult on a toddler by lingering, by it was like an opera.
Oh, goodbye.
At the doorway. Like, it's okay. And they would go, it's okay.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to be very aware of the message this sends. And, of course, if then you raise a child all through their childhood and through their adolescence by making sure that everything goes well, programming them. Certainly, a lot of this behavior starts during the college search when parents play this very high-stakes game mm-hmm. with kids. And then how do you shut that off?
It's a good question, and we make light of it, but we both know, Amy and I, we make fun of it because we have these feelings ourselves. They're difficult feelings to deal with. And let's go to the phones. Let's get Melissa on. She's in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
You really, really are hitting me where I live right now. I teach freshman composition at a small four-year institution in San Antonio, and I took my child, my precious, precious child, off to his freshman year in college earlier this month. And listened to all the speeches kind of for the very first time as though I was always on the other side of this story. Mm-hmm. So the very, very few interactions that I have with parents are strained and always very weird. I don't expect to speak to parents as a college professor. Now, of course, I would really like to call all of my child's professors and ask them 100,000 questions. So I feel for all those parents out there who are trying to do this right.
Melissa, how are you dealing with these feelings? You just holding them in? You just...
I tell my poor husband all the time. You know, we wail together. But I'm not going to call all of my... In case he's listening, Connor, I'm not going to call all of your...
Thanks.
I'm going to resist that temptation.
Thanks for your call, Melissa. Amy, what advice can you give us as parents, give parents out there to sort of resist the temptation to hover over every life decision and every sort of accomplishment?
Well, I think if you see it as a question of turning your child's life over to them, I mean, here's the deal. Their job, guess what their job is? If you've done a great job as a parent, then your child's job is to leave you. I mean, that means it's gone well.
Yeah.
So I think you have to really remember that if they leave you, that means that it's going really, really well. And I haven't heard from my daughter as often as I would like. I really haven't, but I've tried to keep it very low key. And honestly, all I want to know is that she's feeling good.
What about parents who say they have the right to know their kids' grades, especially since the parents are forking over sometimes tens of thousands of dollars for college?
Well, I actually got a letter in my column about this. And this was going on when I was in college. I had a friend whose parents had all sorts of deals and benchmarks, and it was a grade. She had to achieve a certain grade point average, and then they threw this on. Oh, and by the way, she couldn't smoke, she couldn't this, she couldn't that. And I felt like that was the worst deal in the world. I think that if parents can afford to pay for a college education, they should pay for it. And part of the child's education is maybe not doing well and figuring out how to navigate through that. I actually have never liked the idea of bargains and benchmarks in parenting. Life is too unpredictable, and I don't like all these conditions. I really don't think that's a good idea.
At any age or just the college age?
I don't like it at any age. I've never been one to advocate for bargaining. I think that good parents negotiate really, really – they negotiate so well that their kids don't even know it.
We're talking to Amy Dickinson about parents who can't let go when their kids head to college. How involved is too involved? The number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And we'll find out what the experts have to say in a moment. I'm Andrea Seabrook. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Andrea Seabrook in Washington. A little later in the hour, we'll talk about environmentally friendly eyesores. And we have an email challenge for you. We want to know, when does being green get to be gross? Is it clotheslines or natural lawns or maybe compost piles? Email us at talk@npr.org. Right now we're talking about helicopter parents, moms and dads who give their college-age kids wake-up calls, proofread their homework, even pick their dorm room. When it comes to parents and kids, how involved is too involved? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Amy Dickinson is with us. Thanks, Amy. She's with us every other Thursday. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. And now we're going to bring in Connie McAvoy. She's the director of college counseling at Agnes Irwin School in Rosemont, Pennsylvania. She's joining us from her home in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Thanks for coming on Talk of the Nation.
You're welcome. Glad to be with you.
And Connie McAvoy, you've been a counselor for a while. Have you seen an increase in parental involvement?
Yes, I have. I don't really want to admit that I've been doing the college counseling side of things for about 25 years, which puts me smack in the baby boomer generation. But certainly I think that the level of parental involvement has increased everywhere, not just in my world, but certainly in sports, in purchases, in sharing activities. I think that's happened all the way around, as Amy described.
Do you have kids?
I do. I have a senior in college, and I have an eighth grader.
Has your work taught you anything about how to parent yourself?
Very definitely. I consider it to be one of the best perks of my job. I get to learn how people parent through working with their children and working with their families, because it really is a family affair, and then hoping in some cases that I don't operate in certain ways as I work with my own children.
So tell us what to do. Tell listeners who might be listening in for a few cues how they should act.
Well, much of what I say, I think, will echo what Amy's points. One of the key points is to understand your own stuff as a parent clearly and separately from your own child's direction and future trajectory. This is particularly important when you're talking about the college process, because many parents either want to relive their own experiences through their college process, their child's college process, or they want to reinvent the family through their child's college process. And it's really important to sort of face those things squarely in the mirror and to acknowledge them. The college process is an ambitious one and a proud one for students and for families, and those lines can get very enmeshed. So it's important to kind of figure that out. And the young women that I work with at my school are usually pretty clear about their own ideas and have good family relationships, but often have some pretty interesting conversations with mom and dad about, you know, well, that's you and this is me, and how can we work this out so that we can both be happy?
How are the colleges responding to this?
The colleges are responding in a number of ways. There are checks and balances about the college application process to try to make sure that the work that goes forward is the student's work and not any other well-meaning person, either parent or hired consultant. And, for example, some of the applications ask students if they received any help on their essay. So that shows an awareness of colleges being aware that other people are involved in the presentation process. The other thing that happens is that colleges, as the university caller indicated, colleges are aware that parents are sometimes jumping over the student and going directly to college personnel. There's a great story of a student who called a college to say, I haven't gotten any of my housing information yet, and I'm sort of wondering, because it's July, what's going on. And so that in the process of the telephone conversation to kind of unravel what had happened, the person said, oh, yes, here's your questionnaire. I see that you showed the following preferences about smoking and hours and music taste. And the student said, wait a minute, I didn't fill out any roommate questionnaire. What was the date of the questionnaire? And they got into it, and it turned out that the student's mother had filled out the questionnaire, trying to set her son up for the future in terms of, well, it would be best for him if he had this kind of a roommate. It was a precursor of the notion of course, going on Facebook to check out the contemporaries of your college-bound student. But, certainly the colleges have become increasingly aware of the overlap between parental spheres and student spheres.
Connie McAvoy is the Director of College Counseling at Agnes Irwin School in Rosemont, Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure.
And let's go now to the phones, Amy, again. Let's talk to Karen in Culver, Oregon. Hi, you're on the Diane Rehm Show. The Talk of the Nation. Hello? Are you there, Karen?
Hello? Yes. My question was just, I was asking about what did they think about the people that, that really permissively child rear their children. They let them do pretty much what they want. But then later on, they feel, that they don't have any control over the children, and now they're, out on their own. And how do you think that factors in?
Amy, what do you think?
Well, I actually think that this type of helicopter parent is not, I wouldn't put this type of parent in the permissive category. I would put them in the over-involved category. Mm-hmm. And I think they're quite different because, permissive, sometimes there's even a little neglect involved. When parents are really permissive, it's because they're being very passive because they don't want to be involved or they don't know what to do, so they do nothing. And that turns into the equation for the teenager is, it's permission. So I wouldn't put these parents in quite that category. But, I'm interested in we were talking about the safeguards, firewalls, that the schools are putting up to prevent parents from being too involved. You know, you cannot gain access to your child's grades these days without their permission, which I actually think is a great idea. It's a shame that they had to do that. But, yeah, every university student has to sign a form giving their parents permission to view their grades.
And Amy, I've heard people say that that's not necessarily fair for people who are paying the bills, like we talked about earlier. But, you know, I guess...
Well, are you paying for an education or are you paying for A's? Like, what... You need to get clear kind of what you're paying for. And like I said, I don't love these kind of benchmarks and demands. I actually got a letter in my column about somebody who was like, I'm paying for it. I want, you know, my child to be in touch with me X number of days a week and to get certain grades. And she happened to mention in the letter that her son had gone to school 2,000 miles away. And I thought, and I bet that's not far enough, you know. And I understand the desire to make sure that everything's going well. But, you know, you played some tape before the show started, a woman who her son lied to her that he had failed his classes. Well, you know, that lie started a long time ago because that's a young man that's trying to figure out a strategy for dealing with disappointing his parents. And one way, you know, is to lie about it and kind of prolong the whole problem. And another way is to kind of face it. And I think that if that young man had been better equipped, he could, A, if he didn't do well, he could face it in ways that didn't involve lying.
Let's ask another expert about this. Lawrence Steinberg is professor of psychology at Temple University. He studies adolescent development, and he's the author of The 10 Basic Principles of Good Parenting. He joins us from his home in Laguna Beach, California. Welcome, Lawrence Steinberg.
Hi, how are you all?
Very good, thank you. Why is helicopter parenting so bad? Is there something wrong with it? I mean, what's wrong with wanting to steer your kid in the right direction?
Well, there's nothing wrong with wanting to steer your kid in the right direction, but I think that parents can become sometimes so emotionally intrusive that they kind of suffocate the child's development, and they may end up doing more harm than good. But I think there's a difference between being involved and being intrusive, and that maybe sort of is the crux of the conversation that we're having.
So the good intentions are what they are. But the question is, does one draw the line? And where does one draw the line between normal parenting and hovering, being a helicopter parent? Where do you think?
I think that's really hard to answer because I think that depends on the child in some ways. I mean, some kids, to be frank, need more involvement from their parents than others do. I think that, you know, a lot of it depends on what the motive of the parent is. Is the child in need of some kind of guidance, or can the parent just not, you know, break away from the child's life because the parent has issues about connecting and disengaging? That may be one way to think about it. Another way to think about it is to think about what sort of the normal tasks are at different ages. What do we expect kids in young adults to be able to do? And if you're doing those things for your child or for your young adult, then you're not allowing him or her to develop the abilities to function independently.
Can you give me some examples? Are we talking about, like I said, climbing on the monkey bars or writing essays for them?
Well, sure. I mean, in let's say that there's a big difference between helping an elementary school child with her homework and doing it for a high school child. A high school child should be able to do homework without parents getting involved in it. An elementary school child may need some help from time to time. And so the behavior that may be perfectly appropriate when your child is 8 isn't appropriate when your child is 18. The problem that a lot of parents have is that they don't adapt their behavior to fit their child's age. So they get into these habits at an earlier age when kids need more parental involvement. And then they don't gradually pull back as they should as their kids are developing more independence and more autonomy.
How can you tell if you're a parent whether you're doing something because the kid needs help or because you need to help them?
Well, you know, I think sometimes we just as parents need to step back and introspect about what our own motives are, what needs we're trying to get fulfilled by doing what we're doing. you know, one of the downsides of being raised by an overly intrusive parent is a tendency for kids in that situation to be anxious or dependent or depressed. That's what the research says about the effects of parental intrusiveness. And so if your child is like that, overly timid, has difficulty being independent, maybe tending toward being sad or being anxious, you know, one thing to ask yourself is, am I too intrusive, too micromanaging of my child's life? Because that may be the outcome that you're producing.
Amy, do you have questions from your readers along this bent?
Oh, yeah. I think this is it's one of the classic questions of parenting is what's the right balance? You know, my daughter called me and she had her schedule was kind of messed up. It's very challenging to get your schedule together. And it's funny, my first instinct was, who can I call? You know, I wanted to help her sort that out. But instead I said, because then I thought about it and I thought, well, this isn't the last time her schedule is going to get messed up. And she's going to have to figure out where the registrar's office is, you know, and how to navigate through that. It's tricky. And so I said, let me know what happens. You know, let me know how that turns out for you. And she figured it out. She wasn't actually asking me for help. And I didn't jump in. And I thought that was a really successful little early encounter in college.
You know, can I jump in here on that? Because I think one of the things that parents can do in this kind of situation, and I don't think this is that different from what Amy was saying, maybe slightly so, is to help their child figure out whom they can go to on their campus to help them with that problem. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a good compromise between saying, I'm not going to help my child at all, and getting in there and actually doing it for the child. So if your child is having a roommate problem, one thing to do is to say, well, you know, do you have a resident advisor in your dorm, or can you talk to your faculty advisor or somebody in the dean of students office? If your child's having a scheduling problem, again, you know, kids don't necessarily know where they're supposed to go on campus when they're having a problem with this, and these are new situations for them. So rather than actually jump in there and solve it for them, you might help them develop the knowledge and the understanding of where they can go on their campus to get help from somebody who can help them figure it out.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go back to the phone with a few of these questions. Rose in East Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Yes, hi, thank you very much. There's just one kind of hovering helicopter parent I'd like to defend, and that is when the parent knows there's just something wrong. Sometimes there's undiagnosed ADD or undiagnosed learning disabilities or even sexual molestation that's going on, and you can get people in authority saying, well, you're just hovering, and what do you expect? What you're reading is you're being too intrusive.
Has something like this happened to you, Rose?
Yes, several of those things all together.
tell us a story.
I'm sorry?
Tell us your story.
Well, it's just that when I was very perceptive, my perceptions of something troubling were not welcomed. I was always told I was being too intrusive. So as a parent, I saw things just not be able to be intervened in, and everywhere I went, I was told I was too intrusive. And I was probably talking in the same tone of voice I'm talking in now. I mean, obviously it wasn't my tone, but actually I was accurate about some things that were happening that were just out of the norm enough that even as a much younger parent than I am now, I could see something was wrong. So it's the one thing I fear, that there'll be even more of the brush of the hand, oh, you're just hovering, when actually sometimes parents really do know their child the best.
Thank you, Rose, for that very good point. Let's go to Robin now in Los Altos Hill, California. Hi, Robin. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I have two comments. The first one is, I guess I could call myself a hovering parent. I didn't think I was, but I have gone, I have to confess, I have gone on MySpace, and I hope to God my kids aren't listening, my college kids. And I did look at theirs. I didn't go look at their friends, but I just wanted to see what they said about themselves. I was curious. So that's a confession and a comment. And the second thing is, I really do disagree with Amy about the part about requiring your kids or giving setting expectations when we're the ones paying for college. I am a firm believer that college education is a privilege, it's not a right, regardless of whether the fact we can afford it or not. And I have said to my kids, you have to reach a certain grade level. And I'm not saying that, you know, if they don't, I'm saying I'm not going to pay for it. You have to suffer the consequences. I'm not going to pay for a private education where, and I know you have the potential to do well, and pay for you to be screwing around and having fun and doing all the fun things, which are important, and not balancing that with getting the grades that you could get. So those are my two comments, and I'd love to hear what your commentators say.
Thanks for your call, Robin. We'll get reaction from our experts coming up here after a quick break. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. I'm Andrea Seabrook. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're wrapping up our conversation on helicopter parents. We're talking to Amy Dickinson. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. And Lawrence Steinberg, professor of psychology at Temple University and author of the book The 10 Basic Principles of Good Parenting. So a last word. I want to make sure, folks, that we aren't assuming that all NPR listeners are old fogies with old kids. How can young people tell their parents nicely, of course, to back off a little bit? Lawrence Steinberg.
Well, they could say it just the way that you said it, which is, you know, what our son would sometimes say to us when he was growing up. I think a lot of it depends on whether the parental involvement is within the context of a warm and friendly relationship, in which case I think, you know, a teenager or a young adult can kind of tease the parent, you know, out of it, I think. But then there's also sort of parents that have a kind of hostile or relationship with their kids who are also intrusive, and that's a really hard situation for a teenager to be in.
Hmm. And I guess eventually the kids just decide if they don't like their parents' parenting style, they just don't deal with them anymore, huh?
Well, they pull away. And then, of course, it's for some parents, this makes them even more anxious and more intrusive. But for others, it makes them disengage. I mean, one thing I do want to point out is that we could also be having a conversation about parents who are not sufficiently involved in their kids' lives. And so I don't want listeners to think that the advice that we're giving, and I'm sure Amy would agree with this, is that you should disengage from your kids entirely. It's the balance, really.
Amy?
It's all about balance. And you know, Andrea, you know how we all think that our mothers can shoot us a look and we know exactly what they're saying? Well, here's how my daughter got me to back off. You know, I was going a little, you know, really winding up. And she shot me a look and I knew that was back off. And so that's what happens when you have an intimate relationship. You can read one another and they can tell you to be appropriate, and you can then be appropriate.
We had a couple good calls right before the break asking about really trying to feel around for those limits. And I started to think, you know, there are a lot of different parenting styles out there. And even for people who want to have a little bit of a, you know, closer hold, tighter hold on how their child is doing in college, there must be a way to do that without sort of helicoptering in to talk to all their parents, all their kids' professors and figure
right
out their roommates and so on.
Right.
Right. What you can do is you ask questions. You say, so how do you think it's going? What's it like for you? You know, this is a way of you engage your son or daughter in a conversation by asking questions.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Amy. It's always just amazing to me. The parents out there who would rather try to, you know, get their kids' transcripts, spy on their kids', you know, internet usage, you know, put all kinds of strange devices in their house, snoop through their kids' drawers, when the first thing that they should do is just ask their child how things are going.
Okay. Thank you both so much. Lawrence Steinberg is professor of psychology at Temple University, and Amy Dickinson writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks so much for joining us, folks.
Sure.
Thank you, Andrea.